He's probably going to industry is usually what people say about a federal employee who leaves government after a long stretch of service. But that transition is not a simple matter of leaving a government office one day and showing up at a private sector company the next day. My guest today on Industry Chatter is somebody who has done this very, very recently, Dave Winogrand, Vice President of Enterprise Technologies and Services at CACI. It is terrific to see you, my friend. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, friends. This is fabulous to be back. I'm refreshed. I'm reinvigorated. I'm back.
It's the energy that I saw in you a long time ago. And it was when anybody does anything for a long period of time, you were at the Pentagon. You were in DOD for how long?
33 years.
So it was time for a change. And when you came, that's what I want to talk to you about in the first part of our conversation. What was the process that you went through personally, not professionally, that you went through personally where you came to realize, you know what, I've done a lot of service for my country and I can do it in a different way and that's what I want to do?
Yeah. Well, you know, we all have our motivations, right? And so for me, you know, there were no more mountains to climb. And I was in the old civil service retirement system. And so I finally had reached the age where I could retire. And so I was hungry for new adventures. And so it really is sort of a personal journey. And there's things that I really would recommend that your audience think about as they go through that journey, because it's a little different for everyone. But there's a lot of things that you can consider. I mean, do you want to retire and go fishing?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to work in industry or in associations or in academia? Big companies, little companies, small businesses, independents. There's a whole lot of things to think about. And so, you know, you need to do some soul searching. And so the first thing that I would recommend to folks is, you know, read a book. And I did. And I read a book that a friend of mine, Tim Young, recommended to me. And it was called Start With Why, mm-hmm, by Simon Sinek. And it's a great little book. And the basic premise of the book is that we spend too much of our lives focusing on the what, the details of things, without thinking about the why.
Mm-hmm.
Why do we do things? Why does it matter? Why does it make a difference? And so, you know, reading a book, you could pick the book, but you need to do something that allows you to do a little soul searching to try to figure out what matters for you.
Yeah. That's an interesting concept. There's a similar book that I recommend to people called 48 Days to the Work You Love by a guy named Dan Miller.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like and reads like, for the first part of the book, a typical how you make a resume and how you approach companies and all that kind of stuff. But what you take away from it as you get about halfway or three quarters of the way through it is the same concept of what makes me happy, what makes me energetic, what makes me want to get up in the morning and show up for work and do my best work all day long. The same kind of ideas it sounds like you're talking about.
Absolutely. You know, I'm reminded of a book that came out a decade ago, First Break All the Rules, mm-hmm, the Gallup poll book. And in it, it talks about why do people go to a company? Why do they stay at a company? And it's, you know, it's not about like the things like compensation and stuff like that. It's about, you know, what really matters to you. And so the book boils it down to who do you get to work with? Who do you work for? And what do you get to work on? So once you've done this soul searching about, you know, what's important to me? What do I want to try to do with the next phase of my life? Then you can sort of line it up with where's an organization that would allow me to use the skills that I have in a way that will help create value for us together.
Dave Winogrand's now at CACI, my guest on Industry Chatter today. So there, you mentioned some of the options that are out there, and there are a lot of folks that assume that either somebody's going to go to work for a big company, as you chose to do, or that we see our friend Roger Baker, who went to Agilex, which is a smaller company but still, mm-hmm, in the federal space. There are folks also that choose to go independent and hang out consulting shingles and try to figure out what their next move is going to be. Richard Spires fits in that category right now as a high-profile example of that. You considered all of those options, mm-hmm, based on the discussions that you and I had. How'd you wind up where you are?
Well, again, so it's sort of that personal calculus. So I talk to a lot of people, and I would recommend that your audience do the same thing. Get people's insights. Talk to people, not necessarily companies that you want to go work at, but talk to people that have done the same journey as you and sort of get your head around what really matters to you. And again, so my point was, you know, who you work with, who you work for, and what you get to work on,
mm-hmm,
which led me to CACI in the end, because to me, there was like sort of two key things. There was purpose, right? What's the purpose? CACI is a company that has this great track record of not only understanding what customers need today, but being able to map to what people should need for the future. And those are topics that have, you know, mattered desperately to me. And then the second issue, which is just as important for me, is this issue of integrity. And it's a company that just has has an incredible, places incredible value on integrity and honesty and excellence. And I'll just give you like three quick examples because it was really sort of fascinating to me as I learned about CACI. So when you're a new employee and you get there, one of the first things they give you is a little management book that's written by the chairman of the company that's all about what's integrity mean and why is it so important and why does that matter? I'm surrounded by these young leaders who are so powerful and energized and energetic, and yet that's not enough. The company really cares desperately about helping them to grow for the future, so they have emerging leader programs and fellows programs. And you sort of see it throughout the corporate structure. I feel like we're doing book reviews today, but I'm going to throw one more at you.
Okay.
So our chairman, Dr. Jack London, has written a new book called Character, The Ultimate Success Factor. I'm reading it now, and it's just a fascinating story about what matters and why. And so for me, these ideas about integrity, excellence, and purpose were some of the reasons why I chose CACI.
Now, as you looked at the landscape and considered all the opportunities, and I predicted something when we first talked about this, and my prediction was when people knew you were on the market, you were going to hear from a lot of people. And you did hear from a lot of people. You confirmed that for me. As you started to hear about the different things that people perceived you as being a good fit for in their organizations, big, small, doesn't matter what. How important was it to you to fall back on what you learned at DOD and the experiences that you had there? And how important was it to try something that was maybe in the same realm but a little different than you'd done before? I can imagine it might be a mix of the two.
Yes. And again, you know, this is why that beginning personal reflection period is so important, because what I recognized was that I had built up a lot of experience in my career in the Department of the Navy and the Department of Defense, but I still had a hunger to like learn more. And so that was one of the reasons why I didn't choose, I'll say, the independent route, because I felt like, you know, I would like be able to leverage what I knew.
Mm-hmm.
But that grows stale, right? And so what I wanted to do was have a chance to learn more about business, because I had spent my entire life in the public sector.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would be, I say, the other piece of transition advice that I would highly recommend to your audience is make sure that the organization that you're going to go to work for is going to work with you on a personal transition plan.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, CACI just came up with a wonderful transition strategy for me that would give me a chance to, say, use the skills that I have while they help teach me about all the aspects of business that I hadn't been exposed to in my public sector career.
Mm-hmm.
So a specifically laid out transition plan is so important. I'll tell you, as I talk to people, I could almost group people into two categories. Those that had a good transition strategy, went to work for a company, got connected to the people and the organization, understood how it worked, became part of the culture, and those that I'll say sort of like flitted around as independent advisors until the day the company asked them, what are you going to do for me now? and then they just kind of floundered.
Yeah. And I've heard that a lot more often than I expected to as I first dove into this idea of transitions. I can think of off the top of my head three folks who did exactly what you did, transition from very high-profile positions inside the federal government, coincidentally all in technology, in the IT space, and did exactly that. Went to companies, and the idea was, let's give you some time to get your feet on the ground, and that turned into weeks and then months, and neither the company nor the individual is really sure what they were doing there.
Right.
And I find that surprising, and I find it also comforting that you wanted that, and that by finding that in this company, it's really helped you lay a plan for what you're going to do and how you're going to contribute.
Yeah.
What is the key to developing that, and is that something that you started like day one right when you got in the door?
It was actually, I would say the thing that you want to do is to have it done before.
Mm.
So as part of the process of becoming an employee of CACI, I mean, the folks that I was talking to actually had developed the transition plan as part of what they brought to me. So here's what we think we'd like you to do, and this is how we're going to help you become adept at doing that.
Mm.
And so you know, it's a tremendous relief, because I mean, everybody goes to the new job wanting to succeed.
Right.
But even though the issues are the same, I mean, we're still talking about information management issues and information solutions and services and things like that, but it is different. It is different every time you change a job like this. And so, you know, people want to succeed, but they may not know the steps to get themselves there.
I am pleased for you. I admit it is still weird to say Dave Winogrand of CACI instead of Dave Winogrand of the Department of Defense.
Well,
great.
I'm enjoying it.
I'm sure you are, and I congratulate you on that. And we'll continue our conversation in just a minute on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Be right back. Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. My guest is Dave Winogren of CACI, Vice President for Enterprise Technologies and Services there. What does that mean? What exactly now are you going to do at CACI with that title?
Well, we were talking before the break about transition strategy.
Yeah.
So part of my transition strategies is CACI has six business groups, and mm-hmm. the one business group is the Enterprise Technologies and Services Group, and so led by Dan Porter. And so I'm helping Dan work on his FY15 planning effort. How can we look at addressable markets and capabilities that we have and make our plans for the coming year, and also help work on some specific opportunities that the company's working on. So it's given me a chance to sort of learn how the business works, help give advice where I have experience, and hone my skills going forward.
So you're walking into an environment of a lot of uncertainty, a lot of upheaval. We know what we have to work with across the government until January 15th, and then no idea, let alone for 2015. Tell me what you see on the side of the equation that you sit on now that's different than when you were sitting on the Pentagon side.
Mm. Well, it's always good to look at things from a new vantage point, and so I'll say that. But, you know, frankly, what I see is pretty much the same thing I saw before I left in terms of the environment, that you have this fascinating conundrum right now that you know, what brought you here will not necessarily get you there. That the thing that makes people so strong in their jobs today is the experience they've gained. But that also sometimes makes them a prisoner of the status quo. And I'm reminded of two articles that I read recently. One was the Wired magazine article that said, you know, heaven help you if you're mired in the status quo and you want to try to spot innovation, because it requires you to think differently and look through a different lens. Mm-hmm. And then there was a Wall Street Journal article about what's the most disruptive force in technology today. And the answer was you and me.
Uh-huh.
And it was an article about how, like, the power of mobility, and how, for example, when I joined the government 30 years ago, the best gear was in my office. And now for most government folks, the best gear is in their pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And that sets a set of expectations. And so the two forces that I see coming together and just colliding that every large and small organization is going to have to face going forward is you have this relentless pace of technological change that provides such huge, huge promise. Web 2.0, social media, cloud computing, service-oriented architecture, all those things are sort of the hype words of today. Everything could be done differently, and yet we have these tough financial times that are going to be with us for years to come. And what happens in tough financial times is people do one of two things. Human nature either says, I'm going to use this as the burning platform to leap forward and embrace those new technologies and try to find a better way, or human nature says, holy cow, times are tough. I'm going to hunker down and protect what I know,
mm-hmm.
which is then a death spiral because you're hanging on to the older and older stuff. It's getting further and further out of date. I'm reminded of Lord Rutherford, the father of nuclear physics, famous quote about we had no money, so we had to think.
Uh-huh.
And I would say it's like really timely advice for folks trying to figure out how to cope with less money and the need to move forward.
Yeah. You used a word there that I think we're going to hear a lot more of. I'm starting to detect it more and more, but I think its use will explode in government, especially in technology, in the next year or two, and that's expectations. Expectations, in my view, is what's really driving the mobile revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And the BYOD craze, I call it a craze. I'm not sure that everybody would agree with me on that, because I'm not sure how sustainable it is from either perspective, but that's a discussion for another day.
Mm-hmm.
But the way people want to work is driving a lot more of the behavior inside agencies, it seems to me,
right,
than the way that the leaders, people in your former position, want their employees to work.
Absolutely. That was the punchline of the Wall Street Journal article, right, about, like, in the old days, the CIO in control,
yeah,
say no, right?
Uh-huh.
And now people have this expectation, I want to be connected anywhere, anytime, get to the information I need from any device that I have. I would say my variant on the theme that you mentioned is the power and peril of mobility,
because uh-huh.
the power to be connected anywhere, but then the security concerns and all the other things that we worry about.
Mm-hmm.
So there are two expectation sets. There's the expectation sets of the employee about how are you going to give me the tools I need to get my job done, and then the expectations of the broader public about, holy cow, I can do this in my private life. Why on earth can't I do it in my professional life?
Yeah.
And why can't you deliver services the same way that I do when I shop?
Right, and that's the core that I see affecting things like some of the IT issues that are in the headlines right now, which are, why can't I do it the same way from the end user's perspective, the citizen's perspective, or however this the person is interacting with the government? Why can't I do it the same way on this site that I do it on this private sector site? And that's another expectations game that I think maybe some of our friends in government are getting better at coming around to, but still in the process of coming around to, it seems.
Yeah, and so, you know, it was one of the reasons, as we were talking before about transitioning and why you know, I decided it was great time for a private sector career, and I went to CACI, and because I firmly believe, I used to talk about this with you in my government life, that the future is about strategic partnerships between industry and government. Mm-hmm. If you remember the Innovator's Dilemma book by Clayton Christensen, you know, that even hugely successful organizations, it becomes very hard for them to be able to think about the new. And so having new ideas come together with the current ideas is absolutely crucial, to have people from outside the organization working with people inside the organization. I would say there are like three or four things that everybody's going to have to be paying attention to as you go forward. One of them is, you know, you have all this legacy stuff in the Department of Defense, in the business space. We were spending 75% of our funds on the old stuff, right? So you got to figure out what you're going to do with the old stuff. Rationalize it, retire, replace it, those sorts of things. You have this idea about, and how are you going to do the new stuff? So how are you going to infuse innovation into your organization? You have the idea about, we got too enamored for too long with the shiny objects, and so we didn't spend enough time on getting the process right first. And then finally, understanding costs. You know, in the government, my organizations were much better at understanding budgets than costs. And yet, if you think about it, times are going to be tough financially for a long time to come, the chief financial officers are going to want to know that there's a return on investment in order to do something new in the IT sense. And so you know, organizations are going to need help. How do you create a cost culture? How do you identify the business case? How do you identify a return on investment, or else you won't be able to get the funds you need to do the things that need to be done?
Your former colleague, I'm still calling her your colleague, about to do the same thing you did, leave the Department of Defense, Beth McGrath, has talked on this program about the cost culture before. You and I have talked about this. But you still have you and your folks that are still inside the Pentagon still have a long way to go to get people to understand that concept, it seems to me.
Yeah, and I think it's true across government. And, you know, I mean, it's just sort of the nature of the beast, right? Because, I mean, it's the way budgets work, and people focus their time and attention on the things that are being measured. So what the bosses ask for, that's what you measure on. But that's going to shift now, because it used to be, like, what's the budget that you need, and are you spending against that budget? And in the future, it's going to be, hey, scarce resources, we got to figure out the best portfolio of ways to do it. So tell me why I would give you money for an IT project that's going to take 38 years to give a positive return. Mm-hmm. People are going to have to sharpen their pencils, and they're going to have to think about, again, process optimization. Is the insertion of technology going to allow you to, you know, do more things per hour? Or is it going to allow you to have fewer people to do the job? I mean, there's got to be some payoff. Otherwise, why would you go through the hassle and the pain and the cost of trying to replace what you have?
Now, we've spoken extensively on and off the air about the fact that you knew when it was time. But I wonder if there were things that you were working on when you left the DCMO's office that in the back of your mind you wish you could have stuck around to see through, or that you will be gratified when your successors take them to fruition, or whatever. Like, what were some of your babies that you left back there?
Well, you know, there's few things you can choose in life, but you can choose your attitude, and you know, and that makes the world of difference, you know, whether you're the kind of person that sucks the air out of a room or brings life into a room. So you know, along that theme, I have no regrets, and there's no looking back and going forward. But I will say there were some very important things that organization was working on, and some great progress that had been made, and some more things that need to be done. I think that the legislation that gave the DCMO the ability to, you know, take a look at all the business systems, make them come together, have this sort of integrated investment review board process is one of the things that I'm really proud of that we got done. That for the first time ever in the history of the Department of Defense, there's a single business strategy that looks at all the verticals, all the functional areas, all the organizations, Army, Navy, Air Force, defense agencies, makes the functional leaders explain their expectations and the outcomes they need to see, and allows the military departments to say, this is how I'm going to get my mission done and do the things you need me to do. And so you can sort of meet in the middle, mm-hmm. compare and contrast. At one moment, the military department is telling the functional leaders, hey, your strategy doesn't make sense to me. And then vice versa, hey, your plans don't conform to my strategy. And so you know, there's still a lot to do because it's a huge place with, again, $7 billion worth of business systems. But they've been making great progress in identifying, hey, these legacy systems need to be retired. These need to be replaced. We're going to grow this way because this is the outcome we want to achieve. And Beth McGrath and now her successor has the ability to say, hey, wait, stop. You don't get to spend that money until I understand that there really is a business case for doing that work.
Mm-hmm. I have some homework for you.
Okay.
And,
I got my pen.
And we first met on another program on this radio station talking about books.
Yes.
You've referenced three or four different books on this program already. And so my homework for you is, first of all, I think you would be the perfect person to write a blog about the things that just come out of your mind. Every single time you and I get together, stuff comes out of your mind that makes me go, wow, I wish that was codified somewhere, written down in some kind of a form. So I think you're a terrific candidate to do that. And then as part of that, I think you should establish a reading list. I think you should just put down the stuff that you read so that we can go back and see that as a body of work too.
Funny you should mention that, Francis. I actually do have a reading list because one of my first days at CACI, they gave me a wonderful opportunity to talk to one of their emerging leaders classes. Mm-hmm. And I just love doing that kind of stuff. And it was like these great folks, high energy people. And I started spouting off books, and they wouldn't let me leave until I promised I would give them a reading list. So I actually have a reading list.
All right. So
I'm happy to share it with you.
I think you should set up a blog and publish it there, and so everybody can find it. Dave, I congratulate you, and I'm just happy that you're here, and it's terrific to see the energy that you have again, and it's a pleasure to talk to you, as always, my
thank
friend.
You for having me, Francis. It's always a joy coming to see you. I'll come back anytime you want me.
I appreciate that. Dave Winogrand is the Vice President for Enterprise Technologies and Services at CACI, and it's still strange to say that instead of Department of Defense. It's wonderful to have you here. My guest on Industry Chatter will archive our conversation later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.